like the owner actually laughed at me and was like, he was like, how much? He was like, 39 euro for that product. He was like, no one will pay that for their dog. Are you having a laugh? And now, like, he stocks up my products in all of his pet stores. You have to be persistent.
Welcome to The Entrepreneur Experiment. I'm Gary Fox. Each week on The Entrepreneur Experiment, I chat to world-class founders about the secrets and systems they use to build their body, their business, and their brain. Today, I'm chatting to David Hartigan, founder of Hemp Heroes. David is the definition of an entrepreneur. He's an absolute hustler. This is one of the most unusual podcasts you'll ever hear. First 5 minutes, we spend eating dark chocolate, talk about CBD, why it's working, why it's going to be one of the biggest growth industries in the world, why it's misunderstood. Talk about David's background, how he triple jobbed in order to build this business from the ground up. We talk about his life as a pro sports agent while building these two businesses. He's an incredible guy. It's a fascinating story. This is my chat with David Hartigan, the founder of Hemp Heroes. If you're a regular listener of the pod, which I hope you are, you'll know I've been hosting the podcast from Iconic offices for quite a while now, and things have gone really, really well. So well, in fact, that I'm now a member of Iconic offices, working and recording from one of their spaces. This means I can vouch for the benefits it gives to any business. On that note, Iconic offices have given me a number of exclusive complimentary day office trials for my audience. So try it out for yourself for the day. Bring your team. No catches. Simply go to the web link in the description and enter Gary23, so it's Gary23, to claim your complimentary office for a whole day. It's a pretty fantastic offer. Thank you, Iconic offices.
David, welcome to the pod.
Thanks so much, Gary. Great to be here. Yeah.
We're going to do an unusual start to the pod. We're going to do a sampling.
Yeah. So this is a new product we're working on. It's our new CBD dark chocolate. This one, I think, is sea salt. So it's either sea salt or caramel salted. So, what did you think?
So Ben, videographer, just grabbed it tastefully out of the air. So I'm going to try it now as well. So if you're listening, this is probably a weird start to a podcast, but if you're watching on YouTube, this makes perfect sense. So go subscribe on YouTube.
So this is something that we've been working on for a while because we're always constantly trying to expand, I suppose, and develop new products. And dark chocolate works really well with CBD. They just mix quite well. So like you'll find a tiny little bit of a hint of a hemp taste.
I realised I was sucking it into the mic there and it sounded kind of quite weird, I'd imagine. That is delicious. I love dark chocolate.
Yeah. So it's 55% cocoa and it's completely dairy-free and it's vegan. And we're hopefully going to be launching this next in a couple of weeks. So, it's just a really nice product. Like, I love dark chocolate as well. Puts a nice kind of spin on it with the CBD in there. So we'll have our cold-pressed full-spectrum CBD. So in comparison to kind of other products on the market, it'll be a much higher grade because most, I suppose, CBD-infused foods like chocolates, it's usually CBD isolate, which is basically the lowest level or lowest grade that's in them. So as far as I'm aware, there isn't a product like this on the market at the moment in Ireland. So
that was delicious. Yeah. That's probably the best start. I've literally drooled. That was probably the best start to a pod we've ever had. That is delicious.
It's good.
So what is it that you do?
Oh, I suppose I'm an entrepreneur. Yeah, you could put it in that sense. Ever since I was a kid, I've always kind of been fascinated with business and just kind of how businesses take what makes one business successful and another one fail. So, I suppose it's always just been a fascination. And like, even if I look back now, like I actually live in Crumlin. So right beside me is the Crumlin Shopping Centre. And I was always just fascinated with, I suppose, how to make money and kind of what drives things. So like one of my earliest memories of actually making money was bringing back trolleys for the Euros that were in them. And I actually remember one Christmas, it was snowing, so no one was bringing them back. I made 100 quid in a day. Like, so I've always been kind of fascinated with kind of different ways of like, okay, what if you do this? What could happen? What's the outcome?
100 quid in a day is a chunky. Never underestimate people's laziness.
Yeah. It's not bad when you were like, I know, 12, 13.
It's not bad right now.
Yeah.
I'm thinking right now. 100 quid cash as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So a bag full of coins. And then as well, like my next kind of, I suppose, business venture, if you want to put it, was when I was probably around 16. Obviously, that's around the age where most people are interested in alcohol. I actually started making homebrew beer and selling it to my friends. So that was interesting enough. And it wasn't exactly the nicest beer. I don't think we've been winning any awards, but it definitely done the job. Say that much.
So you had it in you. You had that kind of like drive in you.
Yeah, I've always just been fascinated with businesses, and like I've always wanted to have my own business. I think before I ever started my career, that was my kind of ultimate goal, was to have my own business. I didn't know what field it was in, what I was going to do, but it was always kind of that thing I wanted to attain, that kind of, I suppose, freedom to run my own business and kind of have unlimited potential.
What do you think it is? What do you think it is? Is it the freedom thing, or what is it that attracts you?
Yeah, I think it's the freedom thing. Like, it's funny, though, because people, I was only speaking to someone recently and they were like, must be amazing, like you can do what you want, and like you've your own business. It's just like I went from a 9 to 5 to a 9 to 9, or like a 9 to 12, where like I do more hours now than I've ever done, but I am still freer in a sense that, yes, like it's under my control, it's on my time. So it is the freedom aspect, and I think it's the, I don't like being capped at my potential, and I feel like if I was still working as a business consultant, previously I worked in PwC, there's a certain cap you can go to, and I think that's what I don't like. If I put in more hard work, I want that to exponentially grow, I suppose.
How did you end up in PwC?
So kind of in a roundabout way. So what I've done is I've done an undergrad in Tal IT in business management. And funny enough, I actually didn't do great in school. I got 280 points in my leaving cert. So not exactly great, less than half. And it got me just enough to get into Tal IT. So when I got into Tal IT, I started to study business, which was my passion. And I actually got all A's. So I actually finished with a first class honours and then applied for a scholarship called the Aspire Scholarship. So I actually got the Aspire Scholarship, and I'd done a master's then in Smurfit Business School.
Okay.
So I'd done it in consultancy. And kind of around that time, I liked the idea of like going into a business, identifying the problems, how do I find the solutions, and essentially like increase, I suppose, the value, or basically amplify the business. So I actually applied to PwC 3 times to get in. And it's a funny story. It actually came back to my leaving cert results, because back then that would have been maybe 2016, 2017. A lot of big four were actually asking for 500 points in your leaving cert, which was bizarre. So I had a first class honours, got this scholarship, which they only give to 12 people in the whole country every year, out with thousands of applicants. And even had part-time work experience, everything else. Yet my CV wasn't even being acknowledged, wasn't even seen. And was pretty much kicked out of the system, what I got told, because my points were so low. So I suppose the persistence in me. I applied 3 times. They brought me in for an interview for their summer kind of internship program. And I interviewed so well that they actually offered me the grad program. So
that's how you ended up there.
Yes, so that's how I ended up there. So I ended up doing 6.5 years, which is probably a lot longer than I expected. And my goal was always to do like kind of 2 or 3 years, then maybe move into something else. But I just continuously, I suppose, continued to progress, learn. It was a fantastic environment for learning. I always kind of look at it as like nearly like paid college, in a sense, where like you're working with some really smart people, you're getting really great insights, you get to see how people work in teams, you also get to work with some huge clients. Like I worked on a number of different banking clients, like big listed companies. So the exposure you get is just fantastic.
Yeah, a friend of ours, Aoife, she used to work with you. And I pinged her name on when we first came on my radar. I was like, what's this guy like? And she goes, he's good. He's very good.
Well, somehow I managed to do both, because I started the company when I was only a year into PwC. So how kind of, I suppose, where I'm at now with Hemp Heroes, what happened there was I started managing pro athletes. So I kind of started a little bit of a side hustle. I always kind of was looking for that business opportunity that would take me out of the corporate life. And I suppose started managing 2 pro athletes. So one of them was in UFC, one of them was in Bellator. And my, I suppose, job at the time was to get them sponsors, get the media, and basically bring money in, because I was effectively getting half of what I brought in. So it was actually through that I got like sponsors like Chopped. So I know Brian Lee quite well. Ross Nutrition, who are a big nutrition company.
I messaged him yesterday to come on the pod, so you can ping him after this and go, you better do it.
I'll definitely drop a message. And Mattress Mick, actually, which was a really cool collab with Will. So
2 unusual characters.
Yeah, 2 unusual characters.
If you're not sure of Will Fleury, Google him right now. He's got these mad kind of sideburns. He's a fellow tip man, so I love him.
Yeah, oh,
he's
brilliant.
Class guy.
Yeah, no, Will's class. And like Will was fantastic to work with as well, because like when I bring him something, like when I brought him Mattress Mick, he was like, oh, let's fucking do it. He was like, this is brilliant. I love it. Like,
he doesn't take himself too seriously.
Exactly.
Will's great on social media. He's good storyteller, great fighter. You know, he's a, if you're picking someone to manage, back this up a second. How did you start managing pro athletes, though?
Basically, I pitched the idea. So I met with one of the guys and...
Out of where, though? How did you suddenly just decide?
So it was kind of a roundabout way, but actually it originated from a tweet. So my brother, who's a musician, got a tweet from John Phillips, who's a UFC fighter, to do walkout music for him. And then I was kind of organizing the in-between. I had the opportunity to meet John for a coffee, and he was only newly signed to UFC. So I kind of went, well, look, maybe he doesn't have a manager. Maybe there's an opportunity here. And kind of like the idea, I'd never managed pro athletes before, but I was like, look, I can definitely do it. I know loads of people who own businesses. Like, if I can get them sponsors, I can get a percentage. I knew a couple of people in the media. He was kind of a hot thing. So when I met him for a coffee to talk about music, I basically pitched him the idea, showed him my business plan. And to be honest, he was actually blown away. He was like, you've done this all yourself? I was like, yeah, I spent the last week doing it. Like, on the pretext that he could have just said, oh, I have a manager. But I was like, look, you don't ask, you don't get. So I was like, I've nothing to lose. Asked him, he was like, sounds like a great idea, I'll give you half of what you bring in. And
that's a lot. Like, yeah. How did you even come up with half? Because that's a lot.
Yeah, but I suppose, like, if he brought something in on his own, it's his. If I bring it in, it's through my connections,
right?
So I think he was kind of, it was a win-win either way. And then I done so well with John that essentially the word got out and Will got in contact with me and was like, hey, what do you think about giving me a hand with some stuff? So it was through managing the guys, I actually got them sponsored by two CBD companies. So one of them was based in Ireland and one was in the UK. And this would have been kind of 2017. So like CBD was super new. So basically when I got the products, they were just dreadful. Like, I mean, like packaging, branding, price points, the quality, everything. So I kind of looked at it and was like, really, is this like, this is what the industry is? And then kind of done a deep dive, because I suppose, bear in mind, my job at the time was to identify problems and find solutions. So spent the next 9 months researching the industry, spoke to anyone I could who was manufacturing CBD products. Like at one point, I nearly flew to Slovakia to actually like work with someone over there who could produce for us. And
so you're just curious, dude, right? You just have this curiosity kind of buzzing off you. Like, I've sat down with you a couple of times now and you're just intensely curious.
Oh, yeah. I'm constantly looking at new things and like how it can be done better. Yeah.
So you were like, okay, I think there's a business idea in this, or you were just like, why is this like that?
Yeah, it was kind of like, I suppose, I thought there was a business idea and I thought I could develop nearly a better mousetrap, for a better word. Like, I seen there was value there. And then what actually happened was we got a different product and John tried it on his dog, and his dog was highly arthritic. I mean, like, it was on tramadol and painkillers. The vet essentially said, look, if this doesn't work, there's not really much else we can do. And the tramadol actually didn't work. So he started using the CBD and it worked wonders. Like, he got 2 more years out of his dog. And then through speaking to other people who'd use really good quality products, I kind of said, well, look, there's definitely value here. So after 9 months of research and actually the money I had saved for a new car, so I was driving a Volkswagen Boar at the time. I call it Frank the Tank because I literally drove it till the wheels fell off. I used the money that I'd saved for basically the new car to put into the business. And then, yeah, launched Hemp Heroes in 2018. So we launched with 5 white label products, which we actually got manufactured in the UK. And then, yeah, from then it's just grown and grown the last kind of, I suppose, 4.5 years.
Wow. Yeah. Just like that. But you were doing the two together, right?
So, yeah.
Well, you were doing 3, actually. There's probably 1 or 2 more in here.
Yeah.
So you were managing the 2 lads, the pro athletes. You were working in PwC.
Yeah.
And you were doing Hemp Heroes.
Yeah.
How are you juggling those 3?
Oh, well, like, put it this way, you probably count on one hand how many nights out I've had over the last kind of, I suppose, 1 to 2 years. So, like, it was highly chaotic. For most of that, I was single because a relationship just wasn't on my radar. I was solely focused on growing the business and trying to bring in as much money as possible and trying to excel, I suppose, in my career. So, yeah, like, a big portion of my time was obviously PwC. They're by no means an easy taskmaster, and that, like, when you're working, I was working in consultancy, so it is full on.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, because it's not like you were working in a shop, clocking in a 9 to 5, and then you're like, grand on my lunch break, and then after this, I'll do it. You're working in a, what I'd imagine was a high pressure, high output job.
Yeah, like, it was difficult, and like, most times I wasn't working at PwC, I would have been working on either Hemp Heroes trying to push sales, or on kind of the fighters trying to network and get them new sponsors, get them new media. So it was constantly go. And then it got to the point where the fighters kind of became less of a priority. So I kind of dropped that off. And my focus then was kind of PwC and Hemp Heroes. So probably into kind of like 2018, 2019, And it was basically just PWC and Hemp Heroes. And I suppose some of the pandemic helped to an extent that I was working remote. So I was home. So it kind of, I suppose it gave me a little bit of extra time where I wasn't
commuting. You're getting your commute time back.
Yeah, exactly.
I think people don't factor this in. You know, you don't factor in those hours, 2 hours extra per day. So really you're doing like a 10 to 12 hour day.
Yeah.
And you think you're doing an 8 hour day.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Whereas now people have got those time back, like their commute is 30 seconds. So it does offer you that freedom to do new things or do whatever it is. So Hemp Heroes, at what point then did you go, this is going to be something special. I need to focus on this full time.
It did take a bit of time because, like, at first I kind of thought it was just cool because it was like, oh, look, it's something completely new. I've never done an online business. Don't know what to expect. I was thinking if I got a couple of sales a week, this would be really cool. And then, it just started to grow. And then I suppose we started to put all the money back into the business. So essentially any of the money that went... we generated just went straight back in. And that was one of the reasons why I stayed in PWC so long, because I suppose from the get-go, I always wanted to build something that was going to last. So I knew the foundation had to be ridiculously strong and that if we don't do that, it's just going to fall apart. So I kind of made the conscious decision of I'm going to stay in PWC. It's not going to be great. I'm not going to have a massive social life. I'm going to be work and then it's work and then maybe a little bit of fun on the side. But like, I made that decision that it wouldn't take a draw on the business with me trying to look for a salary. And I was progressing quite well in PwC. Like, I got promoted year on year. I actually came third in their innovation competition for a drone idea I had as well. So like, I was doing really well, was getting good projects, getting paid well. So although it was a bit of a tough slog, it kind of worked out for the best, I suppose.
You seem quite driven though. You seem like you don't really mess around. How would you manage your time? Because I'm always fascinated. We all get the same 24 hours. Yeah. Some people just seem to squeeze more out. How do you do that?
So at the time when I was doing PWC and Hemp Heroes, what I'd actually usually do is I was getting up at like probably 6 o'clock. I'd actually train in SPG in the morning. Mm. So I'd usually do Carl's class in the morning. And then...
Carl is an absolute character.
Yeah, Carl's class. Yeah, a few leg kicks in the morning.
It's horrific. Yeah. You get a birthday leg kick.
Yeah.
You wouldn't walk right for 3 days.
No.
He's Carl Cannon, he's a super teacher out in SPG. He's a class, he's just an absolute character.
Oh yeah, he's the best. So yeah, I'd usually do his class in the morning and then that would set me up nicely because the gym is done. That's kind of like one thing off the list.
Yeah.
And it meant then I could go, whether it be in the office or I'd go work from home and get as much done as possible with PwC and then kind of, by kind of like, I suppose 6 o'clock, then it would be, okay, straight into Hemp Heroes, what do I need to get done? And then usually weekends would be kind of focused around that, like get up early, try do something, go to gym, get out, kind of walk the dog, and then, get stuck in.
Is that how you look after? So I like to think of it as like body, business, brain. Is that how you look after your body, train regularly in the morning, or how do you do it?
So like at that time, it just worked better because if I trained early in the morning, it meant then my evenings were free. And also I was training before kind of the rush hour traffic. So I was kind of up before everything was kind of happening. So it worked out best because if I try to train midday, it was just clunky in that like I'd be stuck in traffic. Then you're waiting and then you're back into work and you're kind of stop start. I like the idea of just having a constant flow that I could get it done in the morning and then just work. And I've no other priority later on the day other than get whatever I need to get done, done.
We used to train at 6 out in SPG and we're doing the Wimp to Warrior. And it was amazing. I hated it at the start.
Yeah.
Hated it.
You do get used to it eventually and then...
It completely it broke my frame in terms of... I used to always like, I'm not a morning person, blah, blah, blah. But after doing it for like 6 to 9 to 12 months, it just breaks your frame. And I can no longer now go back.
Yeah.
Like I'm up every morning like 5:30, 6 o'clock. And I love training in the morning. A great day for me is up, dog walked, gym done. By 9 o'clock.
Yeah, and that's, then you can start your day fresh. Yeah.
And then you're only, you know, you've already, for me, that's the win.
Yeah.
That's the tiny win, tick. Okay, I've got up early, tick. I've got to the gym, tick. And the momentum's with you.
Yeah.
You've already had that challenge. You've already won.
You kind
once.
Of your endorphins going as well. You're like, you've kind of conquered half the day. And especially if you're training on something difficult in the morning, you've kind of done the hard part where the rest of the day kind of feels a little bit easier.
Exactly. And it's all about tricking yourself. You got to trick yourself. For me, I'm always trying to trick myself, going, if you do this, you can do that. So my new trick is I joined a gym that has a lovely sauna.
Oh, okay.
If you go to the gym, you get 10 minutes on the sauna at the end. But you need it though, because you're your own, you're the easiest person in the world to lie to.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's been a hard day. Oh, it's been a hard week.
Yeah.
Ah, sure. That's why I love the morning.
Yeah.
Because you get up in the morning, your motivation's here. Like motivation and energy is a muscle, right?
Yeah.
Your motivation muscle in the morning, high. By 5 o'clock,
yeah.
Low.
Exactly.
For me, everyone's different, but for
yeah,
me,
I'm the same. I'm not an evening person in that, like,
no, I can like work in the evening.
Yeah, I'll work, but yeah, try to get me to do something strenuous. Yeah.
And SPG really did reframe that whole thing for me. And that's like, it really was a massive gift of just kind of understanding, you know, there's a whole other side to it.
Yeah.
You know, just that, like, it's like in an extra day.
Yeah, nearly, yeah.
Like, you're like in an extra day, because you'd be up at 5. Yeah, it was hard. Like, I always remember in the summer when we'd be training, you'd be going to bed at 9:30.
Yeah.
Pure bright, like sun streaming through.
But you wake up and it's early though, and it's the sun's shining.
I know, but like, I remember when I was in bed, and I was like, Jesus, those kids are out very late. And my wife was like, it's 9:10, Gary. They're not out late at all. But it's great. Yeah. I like doing things that aren't the norm. I like kind of going against the grain and stuff like that. So you were training SPG, you were cramming in at PwC, and then you were cramming in Hemp Heroes. How then did you step away? How did you know the time was now?
Yeah, so actually a number of kind of things happened. So I started the business with a co-founder, John, and then John kind of, through, I suppose, a number of different circumstances, he kind of made the decision that he didn't want to be part of the business anymore. He was looking at new business ventures, and he'd only actually had his first child as well. So I suppose his life has changed. And then it kind of came down to me of like, okay, look, do I want to take over the business? Do we close the business? Kind of what happens next? So I kind of decided that, I suppose, the business is nearly like my first child in a sense. So I was like, look, I'm not ready to give up the business. I think it still has massive growth potential.
What were you doing at this stage? Were you doing reasonable figures? Were you able to support yourself?
Yeah, we were doing reasonable enough figures. Like, the business was doing well, but like, it wasn't doing as well as kind of it needed to be. And it kind of needed someone full time in the business to drive it.
So you were both kind of chipping away at it.
Yeah, we were both kind of chipping away. Yeah. But it wasn't like it wasn't John's number one priority. It wasn't my number one priority. Like, we both were kind of busy. And then he kind of made the decision, look, I don't really want to do this any longer. I'm looking at other things. So I made the decision to buy John out then. So I took a massive loan, bought John, so it was a 50-50 split. I acquired the whole business then, and then I think for another 8 months, I was actually working in PwC while running the business.
So you're trying to pay back that loan?
Trying to pay back the loan, yeah, exactly, yeah. And then luckily I'd gotten promoted then to manager, so I was on a nice salary, got a nice bonus, and it was difficult because I'd only gotten promoted again just before I handed my notice and gotten another bonus. And a few people definitely looked at me like, are you fucking mad? Like, what are you doing? You're leaving like an 80 grand a year plus job. Yeah. Like, that has everything you need. You've career progression. Like, if you want
everything
to get
you need for some people.
Yeah, for some people, yeah. Like, if I wanted to get a mortgage, it wouldn't have been the most difficult thing in the world. Like, I was a nice track record, had good income coming in. It definitely wouldn't have been easy, but like, would have been a lot easier than it is now. And
did you ever think, oh, do you know what? I'll just stick around.
No, definitely not. No, like, I always knew, like, my ultimate goal was to leave. And I knew
that was the answer.
Yeah, I kind of stayed even longer than I expected. And I think it was just because I got comfortable to an extent. And I was just progressing nicely. Obviously, the money was good. So then, yeah, I...
Well, when you're good at something, even if you're not mad about it, you kind of tend to keep doing it, because you're like, it's Pavlov's dog.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the bell rings and you're like, I'm good at this. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
You kind of get rewarded and you're like, oh, it's okay.
So yeah, so I bought John out and then kind of worked in the business for another couple of months. And then in September of last year, I made the decision. I was like, right, it's now or never. I'm either going to run full tilt at the business, or it's just going to keep tipping along and I'm going to get tired of it. And also at that point, I was kind of coming to the breaking point of, I can't keep splitting my time between the two. Like, it was just getting chaotic. Like, I was run down. I was constantly sick, had no social life.
It rarely works.
Yeah,
I think it's a great idea for what you did. I think it's a great idea to prove an idea.
Yeah,
I think that's really smart. If you can prove an idea while having an income, I think that's really clever.
Yeah.
But I've very rarely come across entrepreneurs who've been able to juggle both.
Both long term.
It's kind of
like
that phrase, you can't be a little bit pregnant.
Yeah.
You either are or you aren't. And I think this, with entrepreneurship, there comes a point where you have to decide.
Yeah. So I made the decision then in September of last year. So went in, spoke to the partners, was like, look, I'm going to leave. And they were kind of like, oh, right, we've just promoted you and like, you're doing really good. Are you sure? I was like, yeah, look, I've started this business. It's growing. I want to give it a good go. So I've made the decision I'm going to leave. They were like, okay, look, fair enough. Best of luck with you. And then, yeah, from September till now, geez, the business has just grown exponentially. Like, I've been able to give it full-time, I suppose, priority. So, like, for example, like, even our pets range, because we've kind of four main segments, because we've over 25 different products. And we went... Originally, if I go back to being a white label product where we had no manufacturing.
What does white label mean?
White label is basically of like a lot of products actually in the market are white label and they're like are private label is another word. So what that is a company will manufacture it for you, put your stamp on it and give it to you. And essentially then that's your product.
So you're a marketing company.
Yeah, you're basically a marketing company. Yeah. So the interesting thing in the CBD and hemp space is that 90% of CBD products in Europe are white label.
90%.
Yeah. So if you see a brand on the shelf, you can be nearly guaranteed that they don't manufacture their own products.
Wow.
Yeah.
That must be unusual across most industries. Is it? Is that very high?
It would be very high in the hemp and CBD space because the amount of money and investment needed to actually enter the industry and manufacture is quite high.
Right.
So that would be kind of unusual. Some industries probably be similar enough. I imagine clothing. Like there's probably just massive big clothing companies who do clothing for everyone.
And food and drink, I suppose.
Exactly.
That's kind of a normal one. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So because we'd reinvested all the money, we'd develop our own manufacturing. So now we have manufacturing in-house. We've 25 different products across kind of four main kind of categories. So we've like, we've human products, cosmetics, superfoods, and then pets. So like to give you an idea from September till now, I think we had, in September time, we only had about 10 pet stores stock our products. And we've over 65 now who stock it. So that'll just show you the amount of extra effort I was able to put in and go out and speak to stores, show them the products, essentially sell them on the benefits.
Mm. When you say manufacturing in-house, is that not wildly expensive?
Well, that's where the first 4 years of revenue went, yeah. So right. It, well over 100 grand went in, yeah.
Right, so that was always your plan, was to take it in-house. Why?
I always knew we were going to play a long-term role in the industry. We needed to have control over our manufacturing because if you didn't, you were nearly at the mercy of whoever was white labeling for you. Where if they say, hey, that's 20-year-old now, but next week it's 30, otherwise go elsewhere. Well, you're kind of screwed. So I always wanted to have that control. Plus, I wanted to kind of increase our quality and be able to really stand over the products that the book really stops at us. Like, we can't say, oh, yeah, sorry about that. That product was made X, Y, and yeah. Z.
No one cares. It's not our fault.
No one cares.
Your
yeah.
name is on it.
Exactly, yeah.
I don't give a shit who made it.
Yeah.
It's you that I bought it off.
Yeah.
So CBD is kind of one of those industries whereby there's a lot of confusion.
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's a massive misconception.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that legal? You're like, yeah. I've been taking CBD. I've been a CBD advocate since actually training in SPG. Because back then, you're so sore.
Yeah.
you're looking for absolutely everything.
Anything. Yeah.
Epsom salt baths, rubs, drinks, anything I could get to like take down the swelling and the soreness. And CBD was one of those first things I took because it just really helped my sleep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sleep is huge. Yeah. Like I wear the Whoop, I think.
Yeah,
Whoop
same.
As well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this hand even.
Yeah. And yeah, Whoop is cool because it's, well, I've worn a couple of different, I suppose, wearables, but Whoop are actually one of the only ones that ask you how much CBD you take as part of your sleep diary. And like, we've so many people use it for sleep. Like, that'd probably be 50% of our customer base.
Yeah. No, I found it really good. And I found it really beneficial. And when I, even when I started taking it, it was really hard to get.
Yeah.
There was only the shop in Capel Street could get it. I couldn't get it anywhere else in Dublin. Couldn't really get it online some places, but then I didn't know what the quality was.
Exactly.
Like you said, I was like looking at all these places going, that looks a bit bogey.
And you see, that's the thing as well. Like the quality is a big part of it. So like CBD comes from hemp, right? And one of the biggest misconceptions is everyone's like, oh, is that cannabis?
Yeah.
Well, technically you're actually correct because cannabis is a family of plants, which includes hemp on one side and then basically marijuana on the other. Now, the only difference is hemp is basically like your non-alcoholic cousin. Where the THC level, so THC is the actual cannabinoid which gets you high, and the THC in hemp is less than 0.2 or 0.3%. So it's essentially like a minute trace. It's barely there. It's one of the things where it's always going to be there genetically in the plant unless you genetically modified it out. But marijuana on the other side is like 20-30% THC. So you're talking the difference is like 100 to 150 times.
Mm.
So that's why it's completely non-intoxicating and it's more of kind of, I suppose, an industrial crop.
Mm. And hemp has been used for thousands of years. Well, we don't really understand that.
Yeah, though. Hemp is a fascinating history. And like that was one of the things that drew me to it because when I learned about it on the CBD side, then I was like, okay, how is this stuff made? And I was like, okay, hemp. I was like, I've heard of hemp clothing. That's pretty much it, or hemp foods. And then when I looked at it, I was like, oh my God, this like... this is probably one of the first crops to be grown at scale by like mankind. Yeah. Like it goes back to Egyptian times. Like there's a really cool thing to look into. It's called Hemp for Victory. So like during World War II, they actually encouraged farmers in the US to grow hemp with the help of the war effort, because they were using the fibers for like basically like parachutes, military clothing, ropes. No way. Yeah, it's fascinating. They actually like were giving farmers money to grow hemp to help during World War II. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah, and then like that's just completely lost history. Like it's fascinating in terms of like how it's been used through centuries.
It's funny how things come in and out of style, come in and out of fashion, and yeah, get misinterpreted and then kind of get associated to this one thing, where in reality it's like a super plant.
Oh yeah, like if we found this on Mars, we'd be like, Jesus Christ, it's the best thing we've ever found.
Revolutionary new yeah product coming to the market.
And like it literally can make thousands of products. Like you're talking from like bioplastics. So like a lot of new BMWs, the actual consoles will have a small portion of hemp in them. So it makes a fantastic bioplastic building materials. You can make a thing called hempcrete, which is basically like a concrete block made from hemp. Foods, textiles, you name it. Like there's pretty much very little you can't make from hemp.
How do you, because there is a negative perception, and I think a lot, I think online you kind of advertise a lot of stuff.
Yeah, so there's certain things you got to be careful with. So like we don't make any health claims in our products, and that would be kind of one of the issues. And then I suppose the bigger issue in the industry is actually quality, because it is a food supplement. So like the market is regulated, but it's probably not regulated as much as it kind of needs to be. So like
why is that? Because it's new.
Yeah, I suppose it's a new industry. Yeah, I suppose the CBD market's 6-7 years old. And like if you went prior to 2017, like it would have been very young. There would have been very few players.
Okay.
Yeah. So like the biggest issue is essentially like cowboys in the industry who are just trying to make a quick buck and then get out. So like I've seen some terrible things, like with products even on the market now, which have little to no CBD in them. And unfortunately, that is an issue where people will try a product and then they go, oh, geez, that didn't work for me. That must be all basically all bullshit.
Yeah. And it's like vitamins as well. Yeah. Like I'll only buy certain things I have no problem spending money on. And my health is yeah one of them. Within reason, I'll spend any amount of money with my health. If I'm putting it in my body,
yeah,
I'm going to spend a good bit yeah of money on it. So like I'll only buy high quality vitamins. I'll only buy high quality supplements because there is that issue. Like yeah a lot of stuff you look at, and if you learn to read labels, you're like going,
it's just filler.
That's yeah garbage.
Yeah, exactly.
It's 90% like water or whatever yeah it is. It's just 90% filler product. And like the actual, you know, vitamin is like 0.2.
Oh yeah.
You're like, what are you doing?
I know. And like that's a massive problem. And like there's actually three different grades. Like I'll show you here. So there's three different grades of CBD. And you see, this goes back to kind of the education piece, is that like most consumers aren't educated. So like they just think CBD is CBD. But like the best analogy I give to people is like, okay, so I have a Micra. Will you swap me your Ferrari for my Micra? And it's just like, just because it has four wheels doesn't mean they're equal. Like a car isn't a car.
Nice analogy. I like
yeah
it.
Yeah. So within the CBD space, there's kind of three main, I suppose, quality types. So you have CBD isolate, which is the lowest level. And like you'll see here, like it's literally as clear as water. Like it's literally
yes
see-through.
Yeah, yeah.
So like what you've actually done there is you've took the whole plant and you've refined it so much that there's only CBD in there. And most people think, oh, geez, that's great. Like pure CBD, that must be fantastic. It's the best quality. It's only CBD. They've took everything else out. But you've actually taken out all the other goodness of the hemp plant. So like you've taken all your vitamins, your minerals, all your other cannabinoids, your terpenes, your flavonoids, everything out of there. So like it'd be the equivalent of like taking an orange, juicing it, and then refining that juice that it's okay just like it's not nearly as effective. And like at the moment, the price.
Why does it do it? Is it cheaper?
Oh, it's massively cheaper. So, okay, like, for example, like, a CBD isolate at the moment is selling for around $500 a kilo. And, like, 1 gram of that would make a 1,000 milligram CBD product, which, on average, will sell at about €50. So you're talking 50 okay cent to make that product. So, right, like, your margins there are obviously phenomenal. But the issue with it is, once people try it, you're probably not going to get a repeat purchase because people are going to try it and go, that was absolutely terrible. Didn't do anything for me, unless you probably took the whole bottle. So like,
and yeah, it's one of those things, whenever I take a supplement or whatever, I kind of test it for a few months
yeah
with my Whoop.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're taking so much stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I know I'm taking like probably 10 supplements a day. So you introduce something new in.
Yeah. You want to see how it performs.
Well, sometimes you're not yeah sure, right? A friend of mine was at my house recently and it was just, I was taking all my supplements after dinner. He's like, Jesus, what do you take all them for? I'm like, for my health. And he goes, do they work? And I was like, I don't know. Don't want to find out if they do or they don't. But yeah. I was like, I think they do for this reason. And with the Whoop.
Yeah.
And by tracking, you're able to kind of go, okay.
You can see a measurable difference. Mm. Yeah.
Like I take your CBD and a magnesium spray before bed.
Yeah.
And I can see when I do that. I can see the recovery score is green.
Yeah.
Whereas if I don't do that, might get away with it for a day, but then the day after that, probably recovery score is coming down.
It's usually deep sleep that kind of starts to kind of fade.
It starts to fade away.
No, definitely. And it's funny, we've had so many people, especially around sleep, and that said that to us, that like, oh, I can see it on the Whoop, or I can see it on my Fitbit, that my deep sleep is just like so much higher than it would usually be.
And you need to figure that out, because a lot of stuff, products you take, you're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's expensive. So you
definitely. And like, that's you kind of go,
I won't buy it again.
Yeah, and you see, that's the thing, is that like, if people try the likes of, say, that Isolate product, or another kind of version, which would be the middle one, would be called a broad spectrum. So you can see it's more of kind of a goldeny color.
Yeah.
So it is processed, but it's not as processed. Now, like, that would be effective, but again, it's not nearly as effective as ours, because what I always say to people, like, the general rule of thumb is, the darker the oil, the better the quality.
I was just going to say, if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, I'm going to kind of describe it to you, or go on YouTube and watch this clip. We're about, 33 minutes in, if you're looking for it on YouTube. So David showed me kind of like in the middle is like the isolate, and that was almost like water. That was that clear. And then the middle one, what's that called?
The broad spectrum.
Broad spectrum is almost like a vinegary color, getting it's towards kind of like yellow to brown.
Yellow, yeah.
And then David's product here, what's that called?
So our one would be a full spectrum. Full spectrum. It's the whole plant.
And that's properly brown.
Oh, it's like black. It's like engine oil. Yeah.
I've spilt that on a few t-shirts.
Yeah. It will stain if you spill it. Yeah. And like, that's what you're looking for. And like, I always go back to the thing of like, if you were to throw spinach in a blender, like, what color do you think it should come out? Because it certainly shouldn't come out looking clear or looking yellow. It should come out looking green. And like,
it's a good analogy. Yeah.
Yeah. Hemp is a dark green plant. So like, anything that comes from it should naturally be dark and green. So like, that's where oils are so dark, and it goes to show you the quality. Now, it's not always a full rule of thumb that like, you can't completely rely on it, because some companies, what they'll actually do is take isolate and darken it with hemp seed oil to try make it look dark. So unfortunately, that is an issue. But the general rule of thumb is, if it's really dark, it means it's a higher quality.
This is a big problem, not just in CBD and health, but in food in general. It's so confusing.
Yeah.
There's so much
education.
And there's so much sly thing that's been done by food manufacturers and big companies in particular. You know, low fat, high protein, low sugar, high this. It's baffling for people.
Yeah.
On how on earth are you meant to understand what's actually good, what's bad, what's good for you, what's bad for you? I've gone almost fully back to kind of whole foods now.
Yeah.
Because you just really can't trust anything that's been processed or manufactured, because you're kind of reading the label and you're like, I'm pretty much sure don't know what half that is.
Yeah, exactly.
And if I don't know what half it is,
chances are it's not my body. Yeah. Yeah, like with our stuff, like, we literally have two ingredients. We've cold pressed hemp, and that has MCT oil in it, and then they have natural flavorings in them, just to kind of take the bite away, because it is quite earthy, and it's kind of one of them things where it's never meant to taste like chocolate chip cookies. Like, it's a plant.
I drink a green smoothie, and my wife is always like, bleh.
Yeah,
it's horrible. I'm like, yeah, if it tasted good, it wouldn't be good for you.
Exactly.
If it tasted like, you know, cookies and cream, pretty sure that shouldn't.
Yeah.
It's not going to have the same health benefit that I'm after. And I always get like a perverse pleasure out of it. The more miserable my green juice tastes, the better.
Yeah.
But I think that for food as well, like, now I look for the least amount of ingredients.
Oh, yeah.
I look at the label.
Keep it as simple as possible. Yeah. Same with dog food, like, because obviously we have the pet products. And what's really cool on the pet side is, like, there's still a lot of people on the fence around CBD, and I can completely understand. One, because there's a lot of low quality products out there, which either have obviously kind of low quality ingredients or have no active ingredient in it, unfortunately. And that is an issue. And the industry is getting, I suppose, cleaned up more and more. But it will take time. And then I suppose the other issue people have is that they think it's just all bullshit. It's all placebo. Mm. It doesn't work. So what I love on the pet side is pets have no placebo, which is fantastic. And like, the stuff that we're doing there is phenomenal. So like, we work with all the major rescues in the country, or the majority of them. So like the DSPCA, Guide Dogs to the Blind, Husky Rescue, Dogs Angels, Dogs in Distress. Like, you name them, we probably work with them in some capacity. And we actually give them our products for free every month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's part of our giving back program, because when I started the company, apart from obviously wanting to have a strong foundation, we also wanted to have a positive impact. Like, it's great if you can make money, but if you can make money and have a positive impact at the same time, I think that's the best business you can be in. So we started with the DSPCA, giving them our products. they love them. And then over time, we've gradually grown it out to more and more rescues. But like, I always go back to, like, a dog doesn't have a placebo effect. So it either works or it doesn't.
And that's a great example, yeah. Actually, because, yeah, the placebo thing is funny. Because even yourself, you're like, do yeah. I feel better? I
exactly.
No, because like some days you do, some days you don't.
Yeah.
Whereas with dogs, it either works or it doesn't. That's a great example.
Yeah, and like the rescues got our products for free. So bear in mind, if they didn't find any value in them, like there'd be no good in asking for them. So like they ask literally every month. We're bringing on more and more rescues all the time. And like we're working on some clinical stuff there. So like,
and for dogs, what does it do?
Yeah, so it's actually quite similar to humans. So the way that CBD works, it works across your endocannabinoid system. So every mammal has a thing called an endocannabinoid system. So it's kind of essentially a number of receptors around your body. And where the kind of science is at is that your body naturally produces endogenous cannabinoids. So you can actually find endogenous cannabinoids in breast milk. So they're like, think of them as kind of like, I suppose, chemicals or hormones to an extent. And a lot of the science is saying that we don't produce enough of them. So by kind of supplementing with CBD through phytocannabinoids from plants, your system works better. Mm. So like that's why on the human side, we'd have people who use them for sleep, stress, recovery. That's why a lot of athletes will use them for inflammation. And then similar enough on the pet side, exact same thing. So like joint issues, anxiety, skin conditions, and actually epilepsy would be kind of the main
oh,
ones.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting, because actually it's unusual to say that. I met two dogs in the last 3 weeks who had epilepsy.
Oh, okay.
Previous to that, I'd never met any.
You'll have to put me in touch, because we're doing, so at the moment we're working on a couple of clinical, I suppose, studies. And again, this is where we're trying to differentiate ourselves from the market, in that we're obviously producing a really high quality products in-house, so we can stand over them. And we're actively pursuing, I suppose, the clinical studies, because we've a lot of anecdotal evidence,
right?
But we really want to back that up with the clinical.
Oh, fair play. So yeah. You're actually doing the studies to prove it.
Exactly, oh, yeah. Wow. So like one of the really cool ones we're working on at the moment is with the UCD Veterinary Hospital for a study for osteoarthritis in dogs. So pretty much 1 in 5 dogs will suffer from joint issues, mainly arthritis in their lifetime. So it is a large portion. And to be perfectly honest, the kind of treatments that are available, it's heavy anti-inflammatories, heavy painkillers, or basically pain blockers. So like there's a really new injection now called Librela. So it's basically like a GABA blocker. Right. So the dog is still in pain, but just doesn't know. Ugh. Now, they're quite expensive. Like you could spend €80 a month. You've got to bring your dog to the vet every month. He's got to get injected. It's not a very fun experience.
No.
Yeah.
But you'll do it though.
You
to be
do
honest,
it obviously,
for
yeah.
your pet, you'd do anything.
Oh, yeah,
spend.
You do
there's no amount I wouldn't spend on my dog, because, you know.
Yeah, and same, yeah.
So I think, but that's not the solution, right? You want
no.
it to be something like CBD where A, it's not as intrusive. My guy got his jabs there last week and he was not happy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a fun experience yeah. for them, for you either. You're stressed no. out because they're pissed
and
off.
And they're kind of off-put for a couple of days as
oh,
well.
Yeah, sorts, I was even feeling him 2 days ago. He still had the lump under his neck and
yeah.
like, oh, I clearly didn't enjoy it. Obviously, you don't, no one enjoys injections, but it'd be great to have something that's non-intrusive, non-invasive
exactly.
like CBD.
And then one of the kind of other issues with the likes of the heavy anti-inflammatory painkillers is over time, they actually affect liver and kidney function in dogs.
Right.
So if you have a dog with, say, hip dysplasia who's 2 years old, by the time he's 7 or 8, like his yeah. liver and kidney is just shot.
Yeah.
So we're doing the study at the moment with the CBD to see, it's definitely not a cure by any means, but kind of as an alternative kind of treatment where they can keep dogs off the medication as long as possible, give them better quality of life. And like so far, the feedback we've had is just phenomenal.
Amazing.
Yeah, like we've had one person go through the progress, because it's a double blind placebo. So essentially it's 2 months on the product or a placebo. You have a month washout period and then it flips. So everyone who participates in the study will get to, I suppose, try the CBD. They just don't know when. And we've had one person go through the whole process and they actually got the CBD for the first round, because I was the only one who knew. Even the vets don't know. And then had their washout and then went on to the placebo. And in their first phase, the feedback we actually got was like, this is a miracle drug. Like the dog is just performing so much better mobility. So I knew, I was like, well, they're taking the CBD. That's
so
exactly
that's
what
interesting.
We want.
I never knew how this worked.
Yeah.
So let's say over a 3 month period, they'll get it on a randomized 3 months. Then they'll have 1 month of nothing and then a month of placebo.
Yeah,
is that
so
how it works?
It's 2 months, 1 month, 2 months.
2 months,
because
1 month,
2 months. The idea
okay.
is we don't want to have any of the cannabinoids still in their system. It's nearly like a flush, because otherwise it could compromise the second phase.
Okay. Amazing.
Yeah, so that's the cool. feedback so far has been phenomenal. So
how long does a clinical trial like that take?
So we've 20 dogs ideally in the process, and I think we've about 15 of them in it so far, so we're still looking for a few more.
Okay.
And then I think it'll take roughly about kind of a year to do.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, so it's really cool. Yeah, so it's the first of its kind done in Ireland, and it's probably one of less than 3 studies being done at a European level. So like, it is very much groundbreaking, and like, so far obviously the results are very good, and we do expect them that way, because anecdotally we've seen so many dogs. Like, we've had people come up to us and say, I've gotten an extra year out of my dog from using the CBD. Like, it's phenomenal.
You seem like a very high energy dude.
Yeah.
Right, you seem like you have a lot of energy. I get good energy from you. I get energy from just being around you. How do you manage all this? Because you're doing a lot, right? You're doing 25 products across 4 categories. I've met you 3 or 4 times now. Each time you're like, new product coming, new this coming. Yeah. I was there. How are you doing this all?
Yeah, it is a constant goal. Like, usually the way I structure my, I suppose, day or my week is everything is just in the notepad. Like, I make notes for absolutely everything in terms of like...
Go deep on this. I'm a massive nerd in this area. So okay. Go as deep as you want.
So usually what I'll do is I'll do my to-do list. So I'll have my immediate priorities, which are like, these are like do or dies, have to get done today. And then I have kind of...
Daily.
Like,
so you'll sit down daily. Every day,
oh, yeah.
morning,
and I'll,
evening,
I'll cross them off as I go through them.
Okay.
Yeah. So like, I'll have my like immediate to-do list, as in like, I have to get this done. Like, there's a time limit on this, or like, this is priority. Then I'll kind of have my lower level.
Do you set a set number of them?
Not usually, it kind of depends. Like, if there's too many in one side, I know I'm not going to get them done. I will kind of push them down, and I'll prioritize them like level by level. So
you have a must do at the top, then what?
Yeah, then kind of like not a like to do, but I got to do this, but it's not a, like an immediate kind of time frame on it.
Okay.
And then I'll have kind of my like extras of like, this would be a nice to do, which like...
And do you do that daily and then update it every week, or how do you do it?
I know I do it daily every day, and I'll update it every day.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just find that's the best way to do it, because otherwise I've so much going on, something will slip through the net and I'll be like, oh fuck, I'm after forgetting I had to do that now.
That's what I was wondering, yeah. because that happens to me a lot, and I'm trying to find systems to just make myself a bit more focused. I find my focus is difficult at times to manage. So is that what you do? You just do it daily and keep on top of the daily?
And then on top of that, what I have is I have a big whiteboard, and I basically call that like my whales. So like, I have some really big, say like retailers or clients that I want to get to stock our products. So I have my full list broken down by country on there, as in like, okay, like this is someone I want, this is someone I want.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you sell your product actually?
So we're kind of, I suppose, multi-channel to an extent. So a big portion of our sales will be online through our own store.
That's hempheroes.ie?
Yeah, .ie and .co.uk. So we have the UK side set up as well. And then we have essentially retailers, both online and kind of, I suppose, brick and mortar. So like, we're being 65 plus pets and vets at the moment. So we're in about 5 kind of veterinary practices and 60 plus pet stores. We've actually, I can announce it now, we've just landed Petmania.
Brilliant. So congrats. That's a biggie.
Yeah. So they'd be one of the bigger chains in Ireland. So that's another 50 in stores.
Brilliant.
So that'll bring us up to nearly 80 stores. And then on the human side, we're actually after signing a couple of big deals. I can't announce them just yet, but we'll be in a lot more locations across Ireland very shortly.
And what are people looking if they're going to see you in the next kind of like couple of weeks to months? What's going to be stocked? What kind of products?
So actually kind of a full range. So apart from the pet side, some of our food products are actually going to be stocked in a couple of major retailers. And then our CBD products.
What are the food products?
So we do hemp seeds. So the hemp seeds are just the seed from the hemp plant. They're not for growing by any means, so like, don't think you can buy a packet and grow your own hemp.
Teach a man to fish.
Yeah. So you just add them onto your cereal, put them into smoothies, porridge, and like, they're really high in protein. Like per scoop, it's like 5 grams of protein. So like, they're super high in nutritious, and high in omegas, vitamin A and E, zinc, magnesium, iron. So they're just a superfood you can add in. So it's more of a topper. So we'll hopefully have them listed shortly. And then, our full CBD range should be listed, hopefully nationwide quite soon.
Brilliant. Every time I ask David a long question, I just lean back and just take more of this dark chocolate in front of me.
It is addictive.
If you're watching on YouTube, you just see the back again, lower and lower and lower. So you cross 4 categories, you know, 25 products.
Yeah.
Where do you want to take this? Like, what does success look like for you?
I definitely want to grow our category lines, because I think there's definitely opportunity to enter into new markets. Like, one of the things we're working at the moment, or looking at, is dog treats. I think the pet space is quite cool, and it might get to a point where the business gets so big that I'll actually separate it. So I'll put the pet to one side, and we'll obviously have the human on the other. That could be probably a possibility, because the pet is nearly becoming a beast of its own. Like, it's definitely not the largest part of our business at the moment, but there's just so much international growth there for the product range, and especially with these clinical studies that we'll have, it'll give us a massive competitive advantage that, like, no one else will have, I suppose, the proof to back up their products. So success to me, I suppose, looks like at least having one of our products in every household. That's kind of the ultimate goal, whether it be a pet product for your dog, your cat, our new CBD chocolate, our hemp seeds for your cereal, our coffee drops, or you take our CBD drops before bed, or you use our muscle balm for your recovery. We want to have at least one of our products in every household.
For you personally, what does success look like?
It's funny, like, when I started out, I would have said having a big wad of cash. But, like, now as I've kind of, I suppose, developed and things have changed, essentially financial freedom, I suppose. Like, I'm not a massive materialistic person. Like, if you were to give me a couple of million tomorrow, I probably wouldn't go out and buy a Ferrari. I'd actually see it as a waste. I'd probably reinvest it.
I'm going to ask you some money, yeah. Some money questions, yeah, in the quick fire round, and they better be more interesting than that.
So, yeah, I suppose just financial freedom, and, like, just being able to spend my time wherever I want, wherever I want to work 6 months of the year in Bali, like, I can have that option to do that.
That's for me as well. I finally realized that for me, it's autonomy.
Yeah.
Time, money, exactly, and place. They're, yeah, the three things that I've kind of, as you get older, you kind of clarify your thinking. Because you don't know what you don't know, right? You're, yeah, like, why am I doing this? What drives me?
Exactly.
And you're often afraid to say it. And there is a level of financial freedom you have to get to. We live in a real society. We live in the real world. We need money to buy things, right?
Yeah.
You have responsibilities, you have family. You know, so there is a financial level. But I think for most entrepreneurs, it's the game.
Yeah.
It's playing the game. I want to be in the game. I want to be playing the game, because it's really interesting. I'm doing my own, like, clinical study of every, yeah, entrepreneur I chat to. Anyone who's had a big exit, I always ask them a couple of different questions. What did it feel like the, yeah, day you sold? And usually that answer is pretty crap.
Yeah.
Didn't really feel like anything, because, you know, we didn't earn out, or, you know, I was still in the business, and blah, blah, blah.
An anticlimax, yeah.
It's always an anticlimax of an answer. So I've started to kind of tweak it and go, okay, what did it feel like the day you finally walked away? You'd done your earn out. So if anyone isn't familiar with it, but if you're listening to the pod, you probably are. If you sell your business, generally the buyer will insert a clause, an earn out, which means you have to work with it for 2 years.
Yeah, of course. So it doesn't fall apart.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes, yeah, sense. So I'll then ask them the question, okay, what did it feel like after the earn out? So finally, 2 years later, you know, you probably got your big wedge cash up front. You got a wedge cash to stay every quarter and every year and whatever. And I remember I met a founder, and he'd sold his business to a massive tech company. And I met him, big spanky apartment. I was like, oh, you're working there. What's it like? He goes, oh, I hate it. He goes, I despise it. I despise every minute I'm there.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, what are you doing? He goes, money. Huge chunk of money. He goes, they did the earnout really clever.
Yeah.
They stacked the earnout, so it was by quarter.
Okay, right.
So it wasn't even by year. Yeah. So if you stayed, you know, so every quarter was like, I do hate it, but, you know, three more months.
It's too good.
And I was just like, it's so weird. And he was like, oh, I'm just counting the days.
Yeah.
I was like, he got some ideas stacked. He goes, already working on them.
Yeah.
I was like, it's so interesting that, like, people think it's for the money and for this and for that and the other. And beyond a certain point, it's not. It's for the freedom and,
yeah,
the game.
Yeah, definitely. No, it is the freedom.
They feel like I talk to them and they're like a shadow of themselves, because they feel this constraint.
Yeah.
And it's only kind of the last kind of 6 to 9 months that I'm really starting to put thought around it, going, what is it about these people? What's affecting them so badly? And then I asked them the question, what did it feel like the day after the earnout? And a few people, again, kind of give me, they're not willing to be fully honest. And they kind of go, oh, no, nothing really. And then a few people, including Michael Dwyer from Pigsback, said, I was depressed. He was like, I was depressed.
I suppose he might have felt like he sold his child. Yeah, it's kind of like, the journey's done.
He'd done 20 years.
Yeah.
He'd done 20 years
and
building
if
it.
You do that long, it becomes your identity. Yeah.
That's it, right?
Yeah.
It's fascinating. It's such a wild thing. Like, you know, you build this thing. You know, it's such a weird thing to do. You build this thing with the hope of selling it,
yeah,
or with the hope of building it so big. And then it happens and you're like, oh, what now?
Yeah, it's kind of like the end of the road. You're like, what's
because it's never like, oh, we've arrived. This is the holy grail that we thought it would be. instead it's like, oh, I remember when we were like 3 years in the business, we were doing this, and then they come alive again.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to watch. Like, and so I'm trying to learn from that, going, what's the learnings there? And it's, yeah. I hesitate to even say it's the journey. You know, it's such a cliche, right?
Yeah.
It's so patronizing. I hate when people say, people get money and then they go, oh man, money doesn't change you. Yeah, I'm sure it doesn't. But like, I think when people say that, they've lost touch for what it feels like not to have it.
No, definitely. And actually, there's a really good entrepreneur. So he was one of the guys who interviewed me for my scholarship, Fergus McCruen. He owns, I'm actually forgetting the name of it now. They're a massive catering company. And I remember I met him one day and he was like, what do you want in life? And I was like, to be honest, I'm not sure. And he was like, I'll tell you what you want. He was like, you don't come from money. He was like, you don't come from money. You know what it's like to struggle and not have a lot of money or kind of have to work your ass off to get it. He was like, you want fuck off money. He was like, you want enough that you can tell anyone to fuck off. You can do what you want to do and you'll have that freedom. And I was
I
like,
love that answer.
I was like, that's actually pretty true. Yeah. Like, I don't want to have gazillions and like have multiple Ferraris, but I want fuck off money that I can decide what I want to do with my life, where I want to be, where I want to live.
And you translate that to autonomy.
Yeah.
You translate that to freedom. I like people like him.
Yeah.
I like people who go, this is what I think.
Sorry, Hugh Jordan is the company he owns.
But like people who have a code.
Yeah.
What's your code? What do you stand for? What are you going for? Too many people are wishy-washy. Too many people are in the middle. Vanilla. You're boring, John. You're boring. Just come out and say what you want. Like people are afraid to kind of go.
Yeah.
Because everyone's afraid to offend people.
Yeah.
They're afraid to like not be like, oh, not be like the neighbors, not be like this person. Damn it. Do what you want. Like do it or don't do it. That's kind of my two modes now are like, do it. Or shut the fuck up talking about it.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Because you get beyond the point where you're like, oh, you're just spinning your wheels now.
Procrastination is the killer for most things. I know so many people who procrastinate over and over again. And like, you've spent that much effort, you could have actually started it four times over.
Yeah. I think it's in entrepreneurs as well. We all procrastinate quite a bit because we're just, you know, just so many things you should be doing, right?
Yeah.
And the shiny object syndrome. How do you combat that? Because I can kind of see, I see a lot of myself in you in terms of like your high energy, you get excited by things and then you go after them. How are you now, you've clearly reined it in to Hemp Heroes. How have you done that?
And to be honest, it's been difficult. And we were discussing this earlier. So I was listening to a Stephen Bartlett podcast and he said he has a thing called his one day shelf. So basically he has this shelf where he puts ideas on that like one day, if it kind of, I suppose, still excites him, he'll get back to it. And I kind of have to, I suppose, try apply that as much as I can, because I'm always looking at things going, I could try that, that looks good, I think I could do that better, that's a really cool idea.
So and your like, one day shelf.
My one day shelf,
I like that.
Because otherwise you just run around like a fucking blue arse fly, where you're running in all directions, you're getting nothing done. And I think if I really focus on Hemp Heroes now, grow it into a global brand, which is the ultimate goal, I don't really know what the story is in terms of an exit or what will happen, but that'll give me the foundation and the resources to then go into, I suppose, the other areas that I want to do on my one day shelf.
And but I like that, is in you don't have to have it figured out. For a while there, I was trying to figure it out too hard.
Yeah.
I was like trying to like, I was holding on, everything so tight. Oh, I must figure it out. But then you realize you can't. You can't figure it all out because you don't know. You don't know what 2-3 years time. You have to have goals like you, very good. I'd like to have a product in every house in Ireland.
Yeah.
Beautiful. That's a very clear, tangible goal and very achievable, but gives you scope then to do more.
Exactly.
Oh, I'd like to have 2 products, 10 products, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about finding that mix, isn't it? I like the one day shelf.
Yeah.
It's a good little analogy. You got some goodies on there? You got some good things that you're thinking about?
Yeah, definitely. Like, so only yesterday I said to you, I was at an award. So we got nominated for a pet award in the UK. And there was so many products there that were giving me different ideas. So like, even in the hemp space, for example, like hemp cat litter is a really interesting, cool idea.
Hemp cat litter.
Yeah. And then even like hemp toilet paper. There's loads of like different offsets you could do, obviously, on the hemp space. But more so in, I suppose, like, again, into kind of health, like functional health drinks is a really cool area at the moment, and it's very much a hot topic.
So, I think so, yeah. I think it's a great idea.
I definitely look at kind of exploring stuff there. So we have a few ideas or maybe some off spins from Hemp Heroes.
Nice. And it kind of ties into what I was talking about someone on this yesterday about, you know, you got to start. You got to get going, because you'll have these ideas, but turns out those ideas are rubbish. And like the ideas you have from getting, someone said it literally in the seat where you're sitting there a while ago, get behind the wheel.
Yeah.
Got to be behind the wheel. It's only by getting behind the wheel, spend your hours behind the wheel, that you suddenly realize this is the area, and you see all these opportunities within the area because you become a domain expert.
Yeah.
You know, the great thing about entrepreneurs when they start is that they don't come from that world. So they come at it from a different lens. But then when you get in that world and you apply that lens to an industry, you suddenly see all these opportunities.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Right, we're going to do our quick fire round.
Right, let's
go. Hope you're ready. What book would you recommend every entrepreneur must read?
I do love the book Think and Grow Rich. I think it's just it's a very old book, but it's a fascinating book in that, like, it's all about mindset, and that, like, your mindset does drive a lot of your behaviors. And especially when it comes to money. So if you have a mindset that you're never going to acquire money and you're always going to be broke, chances are you're going to live that reality.
Good. Great answer. The classics are good. Yeah. What's the one thing in your personal life that you spend money on that helps you massively or makes you really happy?
I'd probably say travel. Like, I've been to Asia a couple of times. So, like, I've been to Bali, Thailand. It actually always inspires me for new business ideas, funny enough. So, like, it's always really interesting to see how things are done in different places and take the best parts of that and try apply them. So, yeah, travel and then probably Whoop, to be honest, yeah.
Yeah, that's
it's probably one of my best spends this year.
In terms of a small output, Whoop is definitely my best
absolutely.
Spend. Whoop, if you're listening, we're open. We're open for sponsorship. What have you sacrificed for your success?
So I'd say the biggest thing I've sacrificed is time, because obviously everything takes time and there's only a certain amount of hours in the day. And I suppose incorporated in time would probably be like friendships, relationships, nights out. You can only do so much. So like time would be the biggest sacrifice that I've made to get to this point. And it's probably a sacrifice I'm going to continue have to making, because you can only do so much. Like if someone asks me, oh, do you want to go out this weekend? And I've got something to do. And it means I'm going to be hungover for a day or two after. And that's just unproductive time.
Yeah.
You just can't cram everything in. So you got to face the reality that, like, you're never going to make everyone happy. Mm. Like, you've got to do what's best for you. And if that's kind of your goal, well, then you got to chase it, I suppose.
You can't have it all. You can't be living two or three different lives. If I give you 10 million euro today, what would you do with it?
So I'd probably treat the family to some extent and do something nice, because I live with my mom and my aunt, so I was basically raised by two women, so they've done everything for me, so I'd massively look after them. I'd make sure that they're comfortable. Then secondly, I'd probably put half of the money into Hemp Heroes. I think just that injection of cash would mean that we could kind of, I suppose, grow our international expansion. Like at the moment we're looking at Europe and the US, that would give us a massive push. And then probably what was remaining, I'd probably put it into startups. Like, I really love what Stephen Bartlett's doing with Flight Story at the moment, that fund he has. So if he'd accept my money, I'd probably throw a few quid in there.
Okay.
I think there's some really cool people involved, like your man, the founder of Grenades, he's involved there and stuff. So they have some really cool entrepreneurs.
Okay.
And I think they've got a good eye for, I suppose, businesses and products, yeah.
So interesting. I think almost everyone I've asked that question to, every entrepreneur has gone, more money into startups. It's the game, man.
Yeah.
Addicted to the game. If I give you 1 million euro and you can only invest in one person or one company, what would it be?
To be honest, probably in the new stuff that I'm looking at. So like in terms of functional health drinks and kind of like CBD infused drinks, I'd probably invest into that. I think it's just going to be a massive growth area. Like, people consume drinks every day. The idea of just having a drink and it's just flavored compared to something that massively improves your health, reduces your stress, I think just is a complete game changer.
It just seems like one of those no-brainer ideas.
Yeah, like, just like,
it's just flavored. Yeah. Why would you drink just flavored drink? Why would you not just have like functional things in it? You're like, oh, makes sense, right? If you just start a new company in the morning, what would it be?
Probably functional health drinks. Yeah, so it's something I'm really exploring at the moment. Like, I'm actually working with Smurfit at the moment, so I have a master's group doing a study with me on functional health drinks.
God, you're all over everything, isn't it?
Yeah,
you have a hand in every pie you do.
It's definitely an area where like something's going to come of it, whether it be now or later, but it's definitely on that one day shelf, but probably a little bit closer to sooner rather than later.
Going to watch that space on that one. Yeah. What do you believe that other people would strongly disagree with or find strange?
So I did have a think about this one. It would probably be the Leaving Cert, because for me personally, I just felt school didn't give me the skills I needed whatsoever. And I think although the Leaving Cert is nearly a rite of passage for people, obviously you've got to do it, it's more of a hindrance rather than something that actually helps you grow, because I just felt it actually helped me, but held me back more than it gave me anything positive. So I think the education system definitely needs to change. I know obviously entrepreneurs are slightly different. They think of a different mindset, but I just feel like it's not applicable to what we do today.
I agree. I would scrap the Leaving Cert in the morning and I would make a continuous assessment right up the whole way through.
Yeah.
Some people do not exam well. Some people do not perform well under extreme pressure. I do not now see the benefit of with AI, ChatGPT, Google. You don't need to regurgitate information. Yeah. You have something, you have a phone now that will get you the information. How do you think? How do you think about things? And exams do not give you that. How do you think about something over a 90-minute period where it's really intense? Hit and miss.
Yeah.
Wildly hit and miss. It'll be continuous assessment the whole way through.
And equally as well, I feel like school doesn't give you that kind of group project work or like even working in teams. Because obviously when I was in school, like it was the case of you do your work, you're siloed, you do it on your own, you learn on your own. You may learn in a group environment, but you're very much not working in teams, you're not working on projects, where that's just not everyday life. Chances are if you go into the workforce, you're going to be working in a team environment.
Communication skills.
Yeah.
Can you communicate with someone? Can you speak to someone one-to-one? Can you speak in a group? Do you have coping skills? Have you talked to people about their mental health? You know, all those things. Have you talked to them about fitness? Have you talked to them about nutrition? Have you talked to them how to be a human? The school should be more about that, not about like, can you memorize this theory? It's wild. I think this is an easy one for you. If you had to make 100 euro in the morning and it wasn't to do any of your business, what would you do?
Yeah, so I had to think about this one. So I actually worked as a private investigator at one point, which was quite interesting through college. So I could
Of course you did.
I could definitely do something along the lines of a service, but like if I really was struggling and had to make money like tomorrow and I couldn't use my obviously like any money I had right now, I'd probably just do deliveries, like delivery driver. I think it's the lowest entry. If you've got a car, like most probably Domino's in most places are looking for drivers nearly all the time. So do a 12-hour slog, get it done.
Oh, good answer. I like that question. It's new and I like it. What's your final bit of advice to every entrepreneur or every aspiring entrepreneur listening?
Yeah, I suppose one of the big things I always joke about this. So like, if you don't ask, you don't get. And I like fully live by that, is that like a lot of people are just afraid to ask a question or ask someone for something and put themselves out there from either the fear of failure or the fear of rejection. And I feel like if you don't put yourself out there, you've already lost. Like you've everything to gain and nothing to lose. And like the amount of new clients I've gotten, the amount of opportunities I've gotten by just asking someone, hey, do you want to go for a coffee? Or like, could you help me with this? Or like, would you be interested in stocking our products? And you might get a no initially, but then it kind of leads into like, if you don't ask, you don't get. And persistence is key. Like persistence is the number one thing I do. I'm so persistent. Like if I want a client, I'll be continuously persistent to the point where eventually they'll say, you know what, we'll try the product. And then I know it'll sell. And like one of our pet stores that we stock, like one of the chains, like the owner actually laughed at me and was like, he was like, how much? He was like, 39 euro for that product. He was like, no one will pay that for their dog. Are you having a laugh? And now like he stocks up my products in all of his pet stores. So like persistence, absolutely. Like 9 times out of 10, you're not going to get the right answer the first time around. You have to be persistent. And I think that's the difference between, I suppose, businesses that do well and businesses that either fail or do okay, is that you need to have that persistence. You need to have that drive to, this is my goal and nothing's getting in the way. We're going to get there.
What a message. What a way to end. David, that was magic. Where can people learn more about you and Hemp Heroes?
Yeah, so I suppose for Hemp Heroes, you can go onto our website, www.hempheroes.ie, and you'll find our full range of products there. You'll also find us on Instagram at Hemp Heroes and also on TikTok. And then, if you want to follow me on LinkedIn, just David Hartigan, you'll get me there.
David, that was absolutely great crack and a delicious dark chocolate.
You didn't even eat me any chocolate, have you?
It's gone, man. It's gone. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Gary.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Wherever you're listening, whether it's Spotify, YouTube, or Apple, click that subscribe button and I will see you back here next week for a brand new podcast.